Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Mary McDonough, wonderful actress, author, life coach, teacher, a little bit of everything. She wears a lot of hats, but you know her work from Erin on The Waltons, the middle child on The Waltons. How are you, Erin? Oh, I'm sorry, how are you, Mary?
I answer to both, so I'm good.
Yeah, that's not the first time somebody has said that to you, I'm sure.
No, it happens all the time, Frank. I'll just call you Frank Boy, if that's okay.
that's fine with me. I've interviewed a couple of folks from your show and Michael Learned a couple of times. And, I always have to ask this because it comes to mind. But while you were, here you are, you're growing up in the in the 70s, right? And you're, obviously attractive people there. You're successful actors and you're going through all of this. Were there certain restrictions that they put on you where, you're like ethics clauses, for example, like you can't be seen with this type of guy or this type of gal or these type of people. Was there any of that on you or was that an issue?
But there was a lot of awareness of being really loyal to the show and, looking a certain way and having a very, a very specific Walton, aspect to us. We didn't want to shame the show at all. And I think that was kind of driven into our heads a lot.
And you all seem to do pretty well with it. I don't remember any Walton, scandals that I could think of. And if there were, it didn't dominate the headlines.
We definitely don't have very much scandal. When I wrote my first book, I said in the beginning that we all have, we all have a hold each other's privacy and all kind of agreed that nobody would ever write a book and tell the whole truth. And if somebody did, the rest of us would get together and kill them.
Well, listen, it's very interesting to talk to someone who's who had success early on and you continue having success and you kind of pay it forward with your life coaching and everything else. Has it turned out, and I guess nothing ever turns out exactly the way we would expect it, but I mean, looking back, what were your expectations coming out of the show? You had a nine-year run, which is just a tremendous run in any business, but, certainly in TV, especially back then, I mean, to have a nine-year run on something with such great success. Did you think about the future much and what you would be doing, 20 years from now, 30 years from now?
Yeah.
What was your mindset at that point?
Oh, I wish I had. I always, part of me, by the time I finished, I had spent over half of my life on it. And so there was a part of me that just sort of felt like that was the way it was all going to go, that we would just be together forever and it would just keep going. And so I didn't really think about the future too much. And I knew that I wanted to be an actress, by the time I'd finished the show. So coming out of it, I didn't expect to be typecast. I didn't expect to have so much against me in a way. And I think I was pretty naive to the workings of the industry that way. I just felt like, well, I work, I just want to keep working. And that didn't happen for me very much. And it was frustrating. And I just felt like, people said, she can't do comedy because she did a dramatic show. And it was just so limiting to me in a way. So I wasn't really that well prepared. And I didn't really think about 20 years into the future. I was 21 years old.
I try usually not to make it like a statement like this, but I remember a couple years ago when Miley Cyrus was coming out of her Hannah Montana.
Mm-hmm.
you know, format, and she, you know, she broke out and she did something. I don't remember what it was, but you know what they thought was non Disney like on stage. And I kind of thought to myself, well, you know, good for her in a way, right? She wants to break out of that, and I don't know exactly what she did, and I don't know how she did it, but you know, that's a judgment that somebody has to make at a you know, at that point in your life. I mean, do you want to kind of break out of that mode or not? Or maybe things are just different now. Let me just remind people that are just turning on the radio or just tuning into us that this is Frank McKay, but more importantly, author, life coach, actor Mary McDonough, and you know her work as Erin Walton for 9 years on a hit show, and you know, a show that you know, has lasted you know, many years. Now, I wasn't a Walton watcher, I'll admit, you know, but I certainly appreciate the work you did. My grandmother was a Walton watcher, which she was more into that, and I was more, I guess, Happy Days or what were you watching at that time? Were you watching your own show, or was it difficult to do that?
That's a really good question. I did watch the show sometimes, but as I got older and into my teens, I just really wanted to hang out with my friends more. So I didn't really watch the show. And now I haven't seen an episode of the show, for probably like 25 years.
Wow.
And, you know, I was a single mom for like 10 years, and I was raising my daughter. So whenever the show was on, which it is often, I was always either doing homework or making dinner or breakfast. So I never really watched the show. So my daughter wasn't even raised with it. But now, I mean, and Richard Thomas just told me a couple years ago, he's like, you should go back and watch the show. It's actually really good.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, I've watched it since. It's well done. I mean, it's certainly well done. It's well acted. All of you guys did such a wonderful job.
It is classic and timeless, and it is so important to people. It's such an honor to be part of.
Now, coming from someone who was raised by a divorced single mom, in my mind, single moms are always sacred to us, and we always look. I, you know, certainly looked at my late mom as you know, I put her on a pedestal and all of that. What about your daughter? Did she know there was a difference between you and other moms as far as at least notoriety went? Did she understand? Even though she didn't watch the show and she didn't grow up on the show, did she know there was something a little different? There, or was that something that was in the background?
It was pretty much in the background because we didn't watch the show until later. She started watching the show last summer, and she just thinks it's so cute. But the funny thing about my daughter was we used to go to Schuyler, Virginia, and do an event almost every year in the fall and raise money for the community center there, which was actually Earl Hamner's hometown, and it was his school. And so we would go, and she would always hear Waltons, and she would sign autographs right along with me. And so she knew there was something different about that, but she was around all these people, so she actually thought that all the fan club people were the Waltons.
Ah, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Did people come in costume and like period costume to events like that, or did you guys go in period costume?
No, we never did that. Sometimes people did when they would, you know, make a special night of it, but most of the time everybody was just as they are now, and these people became friends of ours, and we still know them, and they kind of grew up with our kids, and you know, it was kind of like a big family.
How old is your daughter now?
She is 24.
24, and she's watching it now, and she must really be getting a kick out of that. Is she an actress?
Oh, they think it's hilarious. She's not an actress. She is an anthropologist.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you can't get any further from being an actress than being an anthropologist. Well, actually, you know, maybe, maybe
yeah,
not.
Yeah, she likes bones. She likes dead people and bones.
So that's terrific. Yeah, that's wonderful. It's not easy. It's not easy, you know, raising a child on your own. So, I mean, congratulations there. And
thank you. It is a challenge, you know. It wasn't exactly what I thought, part of my plan. Like you asked, like, it's not, you know, not my plan to not work in my chosen field. It wasn't my plan to be a single mom. It was, you know, so life happens and we would deal, and and you just try and make good lemonade.
Yeah, well, Mary McDonough is the voice that you're hearing, and she's certainly made good lemonade out of her life. And Frank McKay here, but more importantly, Mary McDonough is an author, life coach, a wonderful actress, and she's doing a little bit of everything, a little acting, instructing, and so forth. Let's talk about your writing. What was the first book you wrote?
I wrote was Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Aaron Walton, and it's the memoir. And, you know, I had been doing a lot of public speaking, as you mentioned, and talking about my experiences with having lupus, being a single mom, being, you know, diagnosed, and my activism in Washington, D.C. for women's health issues, having breast implants that exploded in my system and triggered the lupus, I believe. So I was doing a lot of speaking, and people kept saying, you've got to write a book. You should write this all down so more people, you know, will learn from it. And, you know, a lot of this stuff was triggered from my body image issues and you know, the pressure I felt growing up. So I wrote Lessons from the Mountain, and then I started writing novels. And my second novel comes out September 27th, is called The House on Honeysuckle Lane. And my first novel is called 1 Year. And it is about, it takes place in a small town in Virginia with an Irish Catholic family. Yeah, it's a fictitious town called Oliver's Well. And the second novel takes place there as well. It's a different family in the same town. So,
very nice. Yeah, just, You just come across so real, and you know, every time I've ever heard you interviewed, and I think that comes across in your writing as well. So I mean, that's you know, people want to relate with the writer, and I think you have a lot of that certainly going for you. And just in talking to you now for the first time, you seem to have a grasp. You seem to have a grasp on reality here. You mentioned your body image. Issues. If you don't mind, I mean, share that with us. I can't imagine anybody thought you had any problem. You're a very pretty actress and you know, good actress and all. What were your issues?
Well, the pressure was for me to be perfect. And I was raised in this Irish Catholic family, so there was a lot of perfection issues going on. And then when I got into the show, I wasn't an actress. I was a dancer, and it was my very first audition, and I got the part, and the show came less than a year later. So I just didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't feel like I could ask, and I was terrified most of the time. And then Aaron became the quote-unquote pretty one. And people would whisper that to me, and they would go, oh, you know, don't say anything to anybody else, but you're the pretty one. Like it was a bad, and they said, that will hurt Judy and Cammie, so don't ever say I said that. And then, you know, my character started, you know, being in beauty contests and the Jefferson County Cutie, and every time she was in some kind of a contest about her look, she always lost. And Grandma would say, you see, it's vanity. That's what's killing you. And so I got this really weird mixed message about how I looked, and that was my only value. And there was some pressure from, you know, to be thin, always being thin, so I was constantly on a diet and did a lot of yo-yo dieting. And then I had this horrible self-image of myself. I really felt like I wasn't enough, and I was never going to be good enough, and I had to be perfect. And which I thought I was all alone in feeling that, and part of the reason I wrote the book is because I realized, as I started to talk about it in the world, like everybody feels that way. And I was so terrified to ask for help or to even admit it. And now I talk about it. So I'm a coach. So I you know, write and speak about it. But I had a really hard time. And Aaron was supposed to be so pretty. And there is, you know, it's that unrealistic body image that so many women feel they have to live up to, even now. Not a lot has changed.
Oh, it's very interesting, you know. Very, you know, so many times you hear that, you know, that pretty girl, the beautiful girl in school, is not being asked out because everyone assumes that she's inundated with requests or invites to the prom.
That was me. I sat at home at homecoming and prom when my friends were going.
did you really? You didn't go to your prom?
I did not. I ended up going to a prom, but it was from another school and with my first boyfriend. But yeah, but I sat at home while all my friends were going on dates and having boyfriends and going to prom and homecoming, and nobody ever asked me out.
See, I was going to ask you something else, and you know, I asked Michael Learned, but she had gotten married, remarried, as the show was going on, mm-hmm. and so it was a little different. But you know, was there like weird, you know, I don't want to say stalkers, but were there people that were trying to you know, conquer Walton Mountain, so to speak? You know, were they guys coming out, you know, trying, oh, like, this is a big challenge, I'm going to get Erin Walton to go out with me or whatever? Did you have any of that going on? I would assume that there would be.
No. Well, we had our share of stalkers, of people. But for me, what was lucky about my character is that she was sensitive and in a lot of ways. And as I got older on the show, there were a lot of people who wished that there were girls like Erin in their town. So I had people who wanted, who loved her, you know. And then when John Boy's friend was, you know, paraplegic and came home from the war, Erin went out on a date with him. And I got a lot of letters from a lot of Vietnam veterans saying, I wish that somebody would go out with me.
Yeah.
And I'm in a wheelchair too. So it was more of a lovely recognition for who Erin was, not so much conquering her.
Right, that's sweet. That's not creepy, you know.
Yeah, there were some creepers, but we, you know.
Oh, listen, you're very fortunate, and you might have been fortunate that you had your success at a time when cell phones and different things, you know, didn't have videos on them. Frank McKay here, but more importantly, Mary McDonough is our very special guest, author, life coach, speaker. Actress, of course, you know her work as Erin Walton and so much more, and thrilled to have her here, and just a wonderful attitude, you know, looking back on all of that. But you know, again, what would life be like now with the paparazzi trying to catch you at a bad moment, or in a bikini, or in a you know, like in a kiss, right?
Looking right. At and all the haters. And I, you know, I have a fair share of, you know, I have a very active Facebook page, and I have some haters and some people, and, you know, and I can't imagine being Selena Gomez or Miley Cyrus with so much hatred coming at you and a constant barrage of it. I met Miley Cyrus, and she's a lovely girl. I took my girls to see her film Hannah Montana, and she was very, very sweet. And, you know, it's tough, though. You know, I can't imagine, you know, it was hard for me, you know, and maybe talking about it even more is more helpful, because that's one of the lessons that I've learned is, you know, not to keep it a secret and to talk about it more. So maybe having it be out there a bit more, it's, you know, it's being addressed at least. Or for me, I just kept it inside and had an ulcer.
Yeah, and did you have a social circle that was based around actors and actresses beyond the show? I mean, were you friendly with you know, any of your contemporaries on, you know, other? It was CBS, right? Was your
not so much on CBS, but Erin Moran did The Waltons, and she was on Happy Days at the time, so we hung out and got really close for a time. Linda Blair later on became a close friend, and we were roommates. But my closest friends were people who were not in the industry. I had a really tight circle of close friends that kind of really let me be me and be normal, and that they were my saving grace.
Yeah, well, that's terrific. You know, you have a good foundation there, and maybe that's why you're grounded, or why you appear to be so grounded here. But again, you know, that's, you know, that this is something that could always you know, be misinterpreted from, you know, from just a quick conversation here. Do you consider yourself more grounded now than you were coming out of there? I mean, you know, being on TV and in public display for half of your life, as you put it, you know, and you have all your insecurities there. I mean, do you look back and say, well, that was just me being young and me being in an unusual situation, as opposed to you being ungrounded or you know, unnecessarily ungrounded?
I think I'm much more grounded now. I mean, my, you know, it's lessons from the mountain, what I learned, right? So in the book, in that first book, I really talk about the bad times that I had. And even Walton family members have said to me, like, I had no idea you were going through this. Why didn't you say anything? That's been part of my lesson. And I feel now, you know, looking back on it, it's such a gift, the show, and we're all so close. You know, the cast members were still very, very close. They are a family to me. But I'm so much more grounded now, and I had to go through a lot to get to be grounded. I mean, I spent over 15 years in Washington, D.C., you know, being a citizen activist and lobbyist for women's health care and the breast implant issue and lupus. And I found my voice through these kind of horrible things that happened to me. And all of that led me into everything else that I've done, because I, you know, couldn't just do one thing. I always say I have a very big mosaic in my life, as a lot of us do. And people say, why don't you just pick one thing? But I could never have survived doing one thing, not only financially. I mean, I had to just do a lot of different things, and becoming a filmmaker and a writer and a life coach. And once I started speaking, it sort of became a natural flow, and they all seemed to me to connect into this mosaic. And it's, for me, I just never wanted anybody to feel as horrible as I did when I was growing up, which is why I write these stories and why I wrote my memoir. And, you know, I dedicated it to for anyone who has ever felt like they weren't enough.
Well, listen, that's a great reason to do it. We have with us today Erin Walton. You people know her so much as Erin Walton, but Mary McDonough is so much more than that. Author of several books and a life coach, and just a wonderful actress, wonderful person, activist. Frank McKay here. We'll be back right after this. Before we go, quick website where people can kind of follow what you're doing, Mary.
MaryMcDonough.com.
MaryMcDonough.com. You can't get any simpler than that. We'll be back right after this. I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, author, actress, activist, life coach, Mary McDonough is our very special guest. You know her from her work 9 years on Walton Mountain as Erin Walton, the pretty one. I'm sure that makes your co-stars feel great, but they were all pretty. They were all beautiful, you know, young ladies and you know, and gentlemen. They were all good-looking people there, so there shouldn't have been too much jealousy. I mean, was there? Did Judy and your other female co-star, did she have did they have any animosity towards you?
No, Cammy was little. And Judy is like really like my sister. So, I mean, it's funny because now they'll always say, you know, well, Mary's the pretty one. Mary's the pretty one. They're like, no, Erin was the pretty one. And, but I think they realize like how much pressure I felt to be that and how it was supposed to be this horrible secret. I think that they're glad, but, and they feel bad about it too, but we joke about it now.
Yeah. Well, That's funny that that they would feel bad for the one who's considered the pretty one. But if you think about it, I guess it is. It is heavy is the head that wears the crown, right?
Yeah, and I think but I also think, you know, when you're a teenager and you're trying to find your identity, you know, Cammy was the cute baby and she was, you know, smart and lovely, and Mary Ellen was a tomboy, accomplished, smart, sassy, you know, she was like a full-bodied person, whereas I, you know, with Erin, I am a middle child, and so was Erin, and I got confused. It was confusing. Like, her only value was that she was in these beauty contests. You know, it didn't seem very interesting to me. Like, she wasn't a real whole person. She ended up growing into one. But, you know, when you're a kid and you're, you know, that sort of your value is what you look like and not on your brain or how well you can act, it can be really confusing.
Well, how soon does that hit you as a young actress? Because I imagine there were other things pulling at you that seemed more important. For example, can I act? And, you know, you brought that up. You know, you were a dancer, not an actress. So you were insecure about acting. And I'm sure you got over that pretty quickly, you know, once you get some things. But, well, you tell me. I shouldn't answer.
Yeah,
it for you.
Well, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. So if I'd gone to acting classes, that would have been great. My parents got me a coach at one point to help. But when I turned about 15, 14, 15, I really started to be interested in taking classes, and I started to do theater, and I started to study, and that was a relief, you know, because I actually learned the craft, and of course, I learned it from the people I was with, but it wasn't as if we had lessons. It was just sort of by osmosis and being there, so I just kind of dance as fast as I could and try to keep up, and then I really studied and learned how to do it, which is part of the reason why I coach people now too, because I was terrified, and I teach people kind of how to communicate, kind of a communications coach, you know, and work with people on, you know, using acting skills to be able to communicate not only about yourself but in jobs and job interviews, and so it's all from where I came from.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's very interesting, and it must have crossed your mind thinking, boy, I wish I had a Mary McDonough back then to talk to.
And all the time, Frank. I can't tell you. One of my students' parents, because I also, you know, I work with parents and their kids and communication in that way when teenagers, things happen. And I had one of my students and their mom leave, and she said, oh, my gosh, thank you for helping us through this issue. I wish my older daughter had you to work with, because it really would have helped her. And I said, gosh, I wish I had me to work with.
Right.
I wish I had a me, you know, but then isn't that the gift, right? I write about things that I've gone through and share them with people, so maybe theirs will be a little bit easier than mine was.
Do you touch on in any of your books, you know, whether it's your nonfiction or the fictitious books, anything about, you know, I guess the anxiety that would come from either exposure or popularity or lack of popularity or anything? Is there any theme in your book that would have anything along those lines?
There are. Well, Lessons from the Mountain obviously has my own first-person experience with all of those fears and terrors, and kind of how I found my voice, and I kind of came out the other side of the mountain, if you will. And then the theme in my novels, in One Year and The House on Honeysuckle Lane, is really all kind of the same. They're the first one is about three generations of women in this family, and these two women marry into this family, and they have to deal with this very strong matriarch of a mother-in-law. And it's about communicating, how people can get along, how you fit into a family, and that family is really what you make it. And then The House on Honeysuckle Lane is about a family that comes together back into Oliver's Well, this small town, and they have to learn to, you know, deal with each other over their parents' estate because their mother has died. And I have lived all of those things, so I kind of, there's a piece of me, of course, in all of them, but, you know, going through someone's estate can be very interesting, and this, in Honeysuckle Lane, they kind of have to deal with what they're attached to. And it kind of goes hand in hand with my coaching and my beliefs in life of, you know, like, what are we attached to, not only emotionally with the people in our family, but all the stuff and what we hold on to and what we let go of.
Well, I mean, this seems like the cliche question to ask someone like yourself. And let me remind folks again, Frank McKay here with Mary McDonough, actress, wonderful actress, and author, activist, and life coach, Mary McDonough. You know her work as Erin Walton and much more after that. But let me ask you this. Child stars, and again, I feel so cliche in asking this, but I mean, it's such a big, issue. And you had the Different Strokes kids, and you know, fortunately, uh-huh. Todd Bridges it seems like he's doing very well now. But of course, Dana Plato had troubles. Todd Bridges had troubles. Danny Bonaducci from the Partridge Family, obviously, his troubles are there. Do you think it has more to do with what's going on at home and around their own personal life, or do you think it has to do with the set and the reality or the lack of reality that's there that disappears once the show's canceled? I mean, what's your personal feeling on the child star syndrome?
I think it's a very unnatural way to grow up. And there's nothing normal about it. As a matter of fact, there is a secret society that we have called the X-Kid Actor Group, and we all are in touch with each other and supporting each other, and, you know, it's sort of a survival group in a way, but we have a lot of fun, too. But it is a very unusual way to grow up. There are some fantastic things about it. I mean, I wouldn't give it back for anything in the world. It's brought me so many gifts in my life, but it didn't mean it was easy. And you are in a situation where you're usually some of the best and the brightest, you know, and then you are catered to as long as you're performing like a little circus animal. You get treats and people give you attention. And then when you become about 16 or you grow tall, then you're discarded because they don't need you anymore. And they go cast a younger kid who's, you know, 18, who can play younger, or they can, or somebody else takes your place. And then suddenly you have this idea that you have value, people are paying attention to you, and then it suddenly just goes away and no one cares anymore. So it can be very, very hurtful in a way. And it can be confusing. And I think a lot of times with the drug stuff, I think that people anesthetize and, you know, can turn to drugs. I mean, people often ask me about, like, do you think you would have had a body image issue if you weren't on the show? And I always say yes, I probably would have, because I had the perfection thing happening before I ever started the show. I wanted to be perfect. I wanted to be the perfect Catholic girl. I wanted to do everything right. I never wanted to make a mistake. And so that just parlayed into that. So if you have a family history, or, you know, you have alcoholism or whatever in your family, I think you're going to carry that right into your child acting years.
Yeah, and
if that makes any sense.
It does.
But it can compound it, and it can exacerbate it, for sure, I think. And it's just a weird thing, you know. You're in this situation where you're kind of like the animal in the zoo, and then suddenly there's no zoo, and nobody's coming. And, you know, I had to find what I had to offer the world aside from being Erin Walton, because that didn't matter anymore. So I had to really figure out who was I? Who was Mary McDonough, not Mary Erin? And do I have any value? And who do I want to be as a human being to have that value, which is completely different than the fluff of growing up on television?
Yeah, well, no question. I think that's as well said as I've ever heard it. I've had Paul Peterson on a couple of times, and you know, I mean, he goes even further. You know, he compares it to, and again, I don't want to misquote Paul, but I mean, compares it to almost like slavery, you know, in a sense, or prostitution in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, you know, that doesn't go for all child actors, but the you know, that some of these parents are just in it for, you know, for all the wrong reasons, and they're pushing the kid into it and so forth. So, but what you basically are saying is that you know, that the child actors are being used until they're no longer needed, and I guess that's the industry in general. It's
mm-hmm.
just, it's very harsh when you do it to a child.
It is, you know, it is, because the child is just doing, and we're sort of trained to act like an adult, but we're still treated like kids, and yet you're expected to learn your lines, show up on time, you know, have this career, And there's a mixed message there. And it can be really difficult when all of that attention is just pulled away because you feel like, did I do something wrong? And for me, I know I was always seeking approval. It was never, you know, it was always about what everybody else thought about me. Did the producer like me? Did the director like me? Does the casting director like me? Does that actor like me? Are they going to put me in something else? And, you know, you're constantly seeking approval and trying to change yourself into what other people want of you or what you think they do instead of who you really are and what really matters.
That's terrific. Thought, and it's happenstance and it's circumstance. But you know, you basically said that you wouldn't change it. You wouldn't change it for the world, and and really, I guess, helped formulate you into the person and the mother, and now the life coach and the author that you've become. I mean, you would be without that experience. I mean, who knows what you would be? And I'm sure it would be just as wonderful, right? But it would be much different.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, and if I had, you know, just barreled into continued success, I mean, I worked a lot. I was lucky. I did a lot of commercials, a lot of television shows, and I still work now. But if I had been thrown into that right away, I don't know what would have happened to me because I had so many issues to go through. And, you know, I joke about the whole breast implant issue. Like, I always wanted to be on a poster in movies. I wanted to be an actress, you know, and I got these breast implants because of my, you know, lack of self-esteem and body image stuff, and they ended up making me really sick, and I never wanted to be a poster girl for a disease or a bad boob job. I wanted to be on movie posters, and it's just not what happened to me. So, you know, adjusting in that way and learning those lessons that are my life lessons and sharing them has been incredibly rewarding, and it is my life's work now.
Do you see any results from, and again, I'll remind folks if they're just tuning in, Mary McDonough is our very special guest, actor, actress, author, activist, just a wonderful host of things, and you know, you use the term mosaic. You know, with you, it certainly is. I mean, you have so much going on there. But go back to your activism on your breast implant activism, and again, it's it comes across at first as being embarrassing. You know, it's a very personal thing to talk about. But do you see any results from your early activism? Are things different now? Is there different material that can't be used, or is there a different?
No, unfortunately not, Frank. It's they got approved, and I was, you know, at the FDA and working with Congress to try and educate women and try and get a safe implant, which we don't have. All implants now, at least they admit that they have to be replaced every 9 years and that they do disintegrate in your chest, and they do leach silicone into your system. And where does that go? It doesn't have a way to get out. A lot hasn't changed. And it's interesting. There's a Facebook group of survivors of silicone. And you know, I talked about this for 17 years, and it's almost as if nobody heard it. And now women are continuing to get ill, and they're in renewed force about, like, why didn't anybody say anything? It was like, well, and I get letters and emails all the time from people who, you know, read about the experience in the book, or they're going through it right now. So it's unfortunate that people are still getting sick, and that, you know, we worried about that with the approval process. So they try and make bigger, better ones, but, you know, it's not always working because you have these chemicals that your body, you know, has inside of it, and it's harboring it and hosting it with this nice warm body. So unfortunately, a lot of people are still having issues, but the good news about it is that there are communities of people who are still continuing the fight and to educate, and I'm able to help people when I can. And I've had people who have said to me, I read your book and I was thinking of having implants and now I never will. And so, you know, they always say, if you can help one person, then it's worth it. And I have that gift of knowing that I've helped more than one person with different issues in life. And that's rewarding and still, you know, upsetting at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's just who you know of, too. I mean, there are, if a couple of people have come up to you and said this, or several people, you know, there could be hundreds and more that have reacted to your activism on this and your speaking up on it. Again, Mary McDonough is our very special guest, activist, actress, and author. And life coach, a little bit of everything. She's just wonderful in everything she does. Frank McKay here. And I always say this, it's nice to talk to someone who does one thing well, but it's really nice to talk to someone who does several things well. And
you're too kind. That's very sweet. Thank you.
Well, let's get back to the books for a second and let's talk nonfiction. After writing your first book, did you think to yourself, oh, why didn't I bring this up? Well, why didn't I, you know, how much of that went on in your mind afterwards?
You know, a lot. And it's interesting because it is sort of where I'm headed right now. I'm actually writing my fourth book right now, which is also a novel and based on something, an experience that I have had. But I am starting to get back into answering all those questions from the first book because people kept saying, well, I get that you went through all this stuff, and I try not to be really preachy in the book because I didn't want to be like, oh, yes, and here's this, and I'm a coach. So I didn't give a lot of the solutions of what I did. I touched on it. But I think now a lot of people have said, tell us how. So I have a bunch of short stories written about just stuff I know, things I've been through, what has helped me, and I may end up, I don't know, I may self-publish them. I don't know. I thought about, like, oh, they're kind of like op-ed pieces in a way.
Yeah, why not self-publish? You know what I mean? It's so much cleaner nowadays, and there's no stigma around self-publishing.
And I have some things that I've written on Gumroad, which is this sort of, if you go to gumroad.com and look up Mary McDonough, I have some things that I have up there. I have some meditations that I have up on Gumroad. I have a story I wrote about my dog dying that I had for 15 and a half years. And just sort of, there's some stuff on there, you know, that I've just started to post, and people can either read it or buy it or look at it, or there's all a combination of things. So, yeah, I may end up doing it that way because people keep asking, you know, share more of your coaching with us. And I also share some stuff on my Facebook page as well.
You know, it sounds like you find therapy or self-therapy through your writing and, you know, everything that you're talking about here. It's, you know, you're very open about everything. And is that a true statement? Do you find self-therapy through your writing?
I do. I find it very therapeutic. Sometimes it opens up old, you know, Tupperware containers where stuff is stored that you never wanted to burp. But I do find it really helpful to talk about the process. And I think it's because I never talked when I was a kid. I mean, I never told anybody what was going on. And so now it's sort of like if I can share, oh, here's something that I find. And, you know, when I get caught up in my tornado, here's something that can help calm it down. And I think, you know, sharing that is very purposeful for me. And if it helps somebody else, great.
Well, listen, congratulations on all the success and all the different things that you've tried and succeeded at and continue to succeed at. I want to thank you for being our wonderful guest, Mary McDonough. But before you go, give us the websites once again and social media sites where people can kind of follow what you're doing.
Sure. MaryMcDonough.com. And on MaryMcDonough.com, you can, or my Facebook page under Mary McDonough. With the Aaron picture are my books, and you can, there's direct links to go to order them on either from my website or from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of your local bookstores. So all the books are there and on my website and my Facebook page. And the Gumroad is up on my Facebook page too. So go have a read.
Yeah. Well, way to go. Mary, congratulations once again, and thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, this was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Now, hopefully we can get her back for a part two and a part three and so on. Mary McDonough, everyone, you know her as Erin Walton, but more importantly, she's a life coach, author, actress, so much more. Mary McDonough has been our very special guest. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.